So the gazebo had a roof and pillars, but it lacked a floor. In lieu of that were only three lugs projecting inwards from a structural ring. At the moment, these were spanned by a sheet of plywood which supported Leo's back as he curled up on top of it. Once he rolled out, though, he took the plywood away to reveal nothing below except for structural members and plumbing. There were two big tanks, a torus encircling a sphere, and several smaller ones, all spherical and none larger than what you'd see on the shelves of a sporting goods store. These were profoundly ensnared in plumbing and cable harnesses. Sticking out the bottom like an insect's stinger was a rocket nozzle, dismayingly small.
"The real one will have a nozzle skirt bolted onto it," Leo informed us. "As big again as this whole stage."
"Stage?"
Saman exclaimed.
"You mean as in..."
"Yes," said Leo.
"That's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm sorry I wasn't clearer. This is the upper stage of a rocket. There's one for each of us."
Then, so that we could get a better view of the nozzle, he grabbed a strut with one hand and hauled up. The entire stage rocked back, exposing the underside.
"You've got to be kidding," I exclaimed,
and put my hand next to his and shouldered him out of the way. He let it drop into my hand. The entire stage weighed considerably less than I did. Then everyone else had to try it.
"Where's the rest of it?"
Jessery asked. There was an awkward silence.
"This is the whole thing,"
proclaimed Jules Verne Durand, understanding it perfectly, even though he was seeing it for the first time.
"The conception is magnifique."
"Well, since you appear to be an expert on magnifiques," Jessery said, "maybe you could tell us how four legs and a roof are going to contain a pressurized atmosphere."
"It's not called a magnifique," Leo protested mildly. "It's a, never mind."
"We will have only spacesuits, am I right?"
Jules asked, looking to Leo. Leo nodded.
"Jules gets it. Since we need spacesuits anyway, complete with life support and sanitation and all the rest, it'd be redundant to send up a pressurized capsule comprising extra copies of the same systems."
I was expecting Jessery to lodge further protests, but he underwent a sudden conversion and held up both hands to silence murmurs.
"I have been there," he reminded us, "and I can tell you there is no part of the shared space capsule experience I'm eager to relive. You don't know the meaning of nasty until you've been blindsided by a drifting blob of someone else's vomit. Don't even get me started on what passes for toilets. How hard it is to see out those tiny windows. I think this is a great idea. Each of us sealed up in our own personal spaceship, keeping our farts to ourselves, enjoying the panoramic view out the face mask."
"How long is it possible to live in a spacesuit?" I asked.
"You're going to love this,"
Jessery proclaimed, taking the floor with a nod from Leo. Jessery strode over to where he, with help from Frog Ratho, had, for the last hour or so, been assembling spacesuits. He approached one that seemed to be complete and slapped a green metal canister socketed into the suit's backpack.
"Liquid oxygen. A whole 4-hour supply right here."
"Provided you show discipline in its use," put in Sourve.
"Liquid, as in cryogenic?"
Saman asked.
"Of course."
"How long will it stay cold?"
"In space, it's not such an issue. It'll stay cold as long as the fuel cell has fuel to run the chiller."
Slapping a red canister, he went on.
"Liquid hydrogen. Easy on, easy off."
He twisted it off, showed us some kind of complicated latching gasket hardware, then twisted it back on.
"So we're competing against a fuel cell for the available oxygen?"
Arcibald asked.
"Think of it as cooperation."
"What about waste products?"
someone asked. But Jessery was ready.
"Carbon dioxide is scrubbed here."
He twisted off a white can and waved it around.
"When it's used up, slap on a new one. Then, oh, you'll like this, take the old one over to the tender."
He paced over to a separate piece of equipment that looked as if it belonged to the same genus but a different species from the spacesuits. It had color-coded sockets all over it for tanks and canisters. He jacked the scrubber onto one of these.
"It bakes the CO2 out of the scrubber. When this bar has changed color,"
he pointed to an indicator on the side of the can,
"it's ready to use again."
This device is also a reservoir of air and fuel?
Asked Sourvet, eyeing the sockets for oxygen and hydrogen canisters.
If it's available, this is where you'll get it, Jessery said. It's meant to be connected to a water bladder and an energy supply, usually solar panels, but in our case, a little nuke. It breaks the water down into hydrogen and oxygen, liquefies them, and fills any tank you slap onto it. And it uses heat to recycle the scrubbers, as I was saying. Likewise, when your waste bags fill up, we'll discuss those later, you attach them here,
pointing fastidiously to an array of yellow fittings.
Do you mean to say we'll be defecating inside the suits? Archibald asked.
Thank you for volunteering to demonstrate this amazing feature of the Praxis, Jessery proclaimed. Leo and Raz, would you be so kind as to give your Fra some privacy?
Leo and I collected Archibald's bolt from where he had left it and held it up, stretched between us, to make a screen as Archibald shed his coverall. Meanwhile, Jessery fetched a double extra-large spacesuit and trundled it over. It was suspended from a rolling contraption that he called the Dawning Rig. The suit consisted of a big rigid construct, the head and torso unit, or, inevitably, HTU, whose upper back hinged open like a refrigerator door. Each arm and each leg was built up out of several short, stiff, bulbous pods, stacked like beads on a string. This gave it a different appearance from the spacesuits I remembered seeing in Spiele's and on the Warden of Heaven. This one was bigger, more rounded, reassuringly solid. Another big difference, at least cosmetically, was that this suit, like all of the others that Jessery had been working on, was matte black